Hey, grandkids, welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 280. With me this week is Chris Calamita. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How about yourself?
Not too shabby. I would have to say, at least a little bit excited about tonight's episode, because we are going to review SmackDown segment by segment, since it is live on Tuesday. Well, actually, they're calling it Super SmackDown, and I honestly did not realize that part of it was going to be the fact that it's main event also.
They had a main event. They moved main event to 7, and...
Oh, okay. I did not watch main event, or I definitely did not record main event then.
Oh, well, it's
on they did it on it's on the network.
Right, yeah. I wouldn't say that was part of Super SmackDown, but they moved main event up an hour.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. So I was thinking that some of this main event stuff that Jeremy already texted me about saw the airwaves on USA.
No. Let me guess. Jeremy was a huge fan of the commentary during the main event, and Kane versus Eric Rowan in general.
Well, I only heard commentary about Eric Rowan taking on Kane, because it was kind of amusing that we have an article mostly written. I just need to do a couple little editing things to post it. So it'll probably actually make it up before this show, but it's kind of funny that Jeremy and I were talking about how clueless we were about the whole Eric Rowan situation. Like, I just honestly don't understand why you end up putting that guy on TV then. Like, if you're going to bury him as soon as he becomes a singles wrestler... What the hell's the point of putting them on TV? Like, I mean, there's got to be someone more deserving then, right?
Yeah, right. I don't get it at all what they're doing with him. I guess we're gonna go get ahead a little bit. There's also an Eric Rowan match on SmackDown.
Oh,
like the first hour.
Okay, now, and this is the other...
So there are two Eric Rowan matches in under an hour on WWE TV this week.
Wow. Okay, well then, my argument is even more valid then, but maybe he wins the second match because, is it within, the other thing that we should mention is that because this is on USA and named differently, I didn't set my DVR and I had left my phone out in my car so I couldn't program my TV at dinner time.
Right.
So I missed about the first 15 minutes. I picked up where Bray Wyatt is addressing Dean Ambrose, who I'm going to assume had something to say in the ring prior to Bray Wyatt showing up.
Yeah. Ambrose is saying that this isn't over yet. Tomorrow night on Tribute to the Troops, they're going to have a boot camp match, which is the bizarre situation where they're promoting a match that was already taped before their TLC match.
Oh. I guess that's good planning on their part?
Yeah, I guess the majority of people out there don't realize that, so it still works out, Ambrose on Sunday. They have the rematch on Wednesday. They promo it on Tuesday. Again, that's really not a day that people are in tune to watching WWE at all. So you do need to hit that button really hard while on SmackDown the night that there's another show tomorrow night.
I'm trying to find positives with the WWE, because that was something else that Jeremy and I addressed. So, I guess that's fairly smart planning on their part to actually, well, I mean, A, the way they're promoting it, like you pointed out, and then B, just the timing of everything works out well.
Right, yeah. It was fine. I mean, once again, Bray Wyatt's promo, just a lot of gibberish, you know.
I haven't actually watched that part yet.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Now, I don't really care, because he started off at least. He even just started off really odd, because what did he end up saying? The only reason I'm letting you, or that I'm still talking to you, is I'm enjoying this game that we're playing. And I'm like, you keep getting your ass kicked. Why are you enjoying this? Like, every person that you've picked on, except for Chris Jericho, has kicked your ass.
Oh, Jericho even won once.
But yeah, and even Jericho won once. Well, actually, you could.
He doesn't care anymore.
Huh?
And then Jericho just, you know, he's just back on Monday, laughing, joking. Bray Wyatt didn't do anything to him. Oh, and boy, Christian, I know Raw is not going to be really our big focus tonight, but oh boy, Jericho's comedy. Oh, last night. Wow. I can have a pretty juvenile sense of humor, but oh my God, that went beyond anything I can even imagine.
Just like everyone else, they extended that opening segment after a time that they should have.
Right.
Like, I was okay with it, and then at some point I'm just like, I'm tapped. Like, and you can even tell Jericho is just losing a little bit of wind. Because just like, okay, you make the big decision about Cena and Rollins. That's it. Like, that should be the end of that segment. But instead, he's got to drag this whole thing out and do the whole Paul Heyman thing.
And then they bring him out again an hour later for the Rusevs.
And
him at all. Calling this woman he's pretty much never met before a slut and a skank, and it's just like, yeah, I know they're heels, but sometimes with them, it's just like, what have they ever really done that's so wrong? Everyone else seems to pick on them for having pride in their country.
That is just one of the weird things about his character that has kind of irked me too, is that there really shouldn't be a problem. He's won clean pretty much all of his feuds.
Yeah, he's beaten everybody.
If he cheat, okay, I get it. You're cheating heel thing. And I understand why the crowd is booing. Like, I understand that part. But, the people-wise, it's just like, they really do pick on him.
Yeah.
So,
go back around to SmackDown.
Yeah, so
the
I did not
segment you missed.
Huh? Yeah.
The opening segment you missed.
Yeah, let's fill the crowd in at least with the Chris perspective, since I'm not going to be able to.
Okay. SmackDown opened with Roman Reigns making his first in-ring appearance since September. He faced Fandango after that their segment last night. Match was longer than you thought we would think it would be, and maybe it should have been, and Reigns, I wouldn't say he sold a lot. I mean, some punches, you know, a chin lock, but the chin lock took about a minute or two.
Right.
And then Reigns was in. Reigns, you know, he showed some good moves. Everything was on point with Reigns. He was crisp with everything he did. He looked very good. Now, finish the match with the Superman punch and the spear. Oh. And a tremendous crowd reaction for all you internet geeks out there who are expecting him to fall flat on his face. uh-uh, it's not happening yet.
Oh. Yeah, I think that, and I'm not sure if this one got lost from Jeremy and I, one of our discussions, but we're talking about how there is basically no difference between Cesaro and Roman Reigns. But one guy's getting pushed to the moon, and the other guy, after seemingly heading in the right direction at WrestleMania, is turned into a jobber.
I disagree with that. I see more in Reigns than I do. As far as star potential, I see way more in Reigns than I do in Cesaro. I can't completely subscribe to that one. Because Cesaro should be a lot higher than he is, but I don't see that ceiling being that all that high either.
Okay, I mean, I think that's a fair enough assessment, but that still doesn't mean he should be in the boat that he's in right now.
Absolutely not. Him and Tyson Kidd jobbed on main event of the New Day again. He deserves way better than that, of course.
Okay, yeah, because that's and this is just another one of those topics that to me keeps coming up, but it's always that their placement of people just doesn't make any sense right now. At some point, they need to have some sort of hierarchy other than John Cena, Roman Reigns, I guess maybe sort of Dolph Ziggler somewhere in there at this point. And I'm trying to think of who else, but I think that's it, honestly. And the couple of heels, like Rusev, and I guess they're trying to reestablish Big Show, which is just...
Right. Now that, I would actually... You know what? I would actually... Because they've got Big Show and Roman Reigns on a collision course, and I get the idea of it, of wanting Reigns to topple the Giant. But you know what? If you want Reigns to go on house shows and, quote-unquote, learn how to work, put him against Cesaro. Have them, you know, on house shows for the next, you know, month or two. You know, so now that's where I don't see the comparison as in, you know, that, you know, Cesaro would excel in Reigns' slot, but right. I can see that. But as far as on the heel side, where Cesaro should be in comparison to say Big Show or Kane, I do agree that's ridiculous. I think that Cesaro absolutely should be, you know, if it was me, I would say that, you know, Cesaro would be the heel that I would be putting against Roman Reigns night after night.
Yeah, like I said, I definitely saw where you were coming from, but it's just a mystery why they wasted him like that, though. Like, yeah. They need someone in that position, like, it wasn't bad when, it was Christian. Like, you always knew that someone was moving up the heel ranks when they beat Christian. And then occasionally when he went heel again, you could say that about the baby faces that he faced. And they don't have that guy, and Cesaro could serve that kind of a function.
I agree. And the other thing is, okay, Reigns beats Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Who are his opponents on the heel side, then? I guess they'll kind of save Rusev for that, but then after that, where do you go? There is something there. They need heels. They need heels. And I think Cesaro could be a great heel. Now, he was building up some babyface traction, but, you know, maybe that still wasn't time yet, but he should on the heel side, he should be, no, way higher than he is. He should be higher than Big Show. He should be higher than Kane. Probably higher than Luke Harper. He's just below all of them.
Well, I could see Harper challenging him later. He's another one that, for the time being, he's definitely not been around as long as Cesaro, even though he has been around kind of a long time.
anyone argue on the heel side, maybe Cesaro should be neck and neck, if not ahead of Bray Wyatt.
Oh.
Because yeah, Bray has just not impressed me for a while. They even went through this whole reboot process, and then he comes back, and it's the same old crap. I mean, the matches are good. Him and Ambrose have some chemistry. I actually like their matches in Survivor Series better than I like their TLC match. It's kind of surprisingly, because I thought they were going to have a great match in TLC, but they had, you know, other things in them, including, you know, following the Demolition Derby at the WWE.
Yeah, well, that match was... it was the second best of the night, at least, in my opinion.
Right.
So, it's hard to really knock it too much. Okay, did anything else happen before the Bray Wyatt end here, then? Because I feel like we need to make sure that we keep these things at least a little bit short if we're going to do this style. Especially since we're at the 15-minute mark,
sorry.
Too.
I'm verbose. I apologize.
No, I don't think it's just you.
I have Usos paused on my screen in segment 3.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and hit stop here. Okie doke. So we made an executive decision to go ahead and watch the Naomi and Jimmy Uso segment afterwards, just because, well, the Usos wrestled with Eric Rowan against Luke Harper and Damian Mizdow and The Miz.
Yes, I would say enjoyable match. Most six-man tags in WWE are, you know, forwarded the story of, you know, Jimmy Uso, Miz, and Mizdow. Miz definitely getting, over the last two nights, becoming more annoyed with Mizdow, you know, hogging the spotlight. You've noticed Mizdow kind of mimicking Miz less than he has. He missed some key spots, and even at one point started actually mimicking Harper too, that annoyed the Miz as well. So yeah, I good match. Your thoughts, Kev?
Well, and I'm probably repeating myself, but just because this segment did just happen, it's annoying me that they're doing the Mizdow Miz kind of breakup part as they're trying to make this serious about the Miz and Naomi. Because if he's to be taken seriously, his stunt double shouldn't be the one double-crossing him right now. Like, I understand that there's supposed to be some pomposity to his character. I fully get that, but you know, he should also still have some power, or else he just looks like a weenie altogether.
Yeah, I guess I agree somewhat that, you know, the focus should be on the Miz and Mizdow versus the Usos feud, and not, you know, not already teasing Miz and Mizdow, you know, problems. It probably is a little premature.
Well,
they're still in a feud, and Miz still has to come off like a giant douche who's trying to steal another man's woman while he's also dealing with this weird stuff in his own camp.
Right, and I think that's the thing. It's just like, just leave well enough alone. Like, I guess I think that I'm trying to get his woman to cheat on him within the own company is definitely a salacious enough event that it doesn't need any enhancement. You know, if they were just going through some, you know, boring feud or just fighting Los Matadores or something, I could understand, you know, having a side story going on. But this is kind of juicy. Like, you don't need to mess this up. This is kind of easy stuff. Cheating is an easy subject.
Right.
Just don't make it more complicated. And they're making it more complicated.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I do think that, plus I think it's just premature for Miz and Miz breaking up. I mean, there's still juice in the act. I mean, they should be you know, it's just going to take a little while longer for Mizdow to, you know, to break away. You can do little things here and there, but it's almost like they're going too hard with it in the last couple of, that last couple nights here.
Right. I agree. And then the other really interesting part of the match was the fact that Eric Rowan, after all of the negative things we said in the opening segment, for reasons just unknown to me, gets the pinfall on The Miz during the match.
Yeah, he loses three matches in a row in 1 week, and then he went and then he just wins a match, and there's not really imagine a storyline he's not really in.
Yeah,
not really sure why Harper was there either.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, they do that, but it's just like it doesn't match the stories at all. Like, it really doesn't. Rowan's not going to go after the tag team titles now.
Right. It was just a. I'm not going to overthink it that much. It was just a fun match. That's it. That's all. I enjoyed the match.
Oh, well, I don't feel like that's overthinking it. I did enjoy the match, and I'm going to guess that more people did watch Harper beat The Miz than watched Kane beat him on Main Event.
Yeah, probably by about a couple million, yeah. just a small deficit there.
So there is that part, too. Yeah. Well, nothing more to say about this segment?
Nothing more at all. No. Now it's time for one of those really long Ryback matches that always end up going very well. Well, it's with Seth Rollins, so hopefully it'll be better than usual.
Okie doke, kids. We're going to hit stop again here and watch another segment. Okie doke. So this break was in two segments. We were supposed to have a Seth Rollins versus Ryback match. In some wise ways, and in some ways that will contradict our earlier talk, the WWE has finally decided to have Rusev pull a dick maneuver.
Yes, finally, yeah.
It's nice of them to make us sound like a bunch of asses within even less than an hour.
Yeah, it happens, but no, yeah, as Ryback was coming down to the ramp for his match with Seth Rollins, Rusev attacked him from behind, knocked him off the stage, hit him with two super kicks, and took him out of the match. So, yes, Rusev has actually committed a big dick move, and good for him for that.
Yeah, it's nice of a heel to pull a dick maneuver. I'm completely okay with this.
Yes, very good.
It also gets them out of giving away a Ryback versus Seth Rollins match. So, you know, I guess if we're scoring at home, we, might actually be on a double letter play there, for all those Scrabble fans. So,
Yep. So yeah, good segment to heat up whatever they're gonna do with Rusev and Ryback, or whatever they're going to do that singles match. There's 6 weeks into the Royal Rumble. I don't know if I've seen that being a Rumble match. That probably won't end up being something they'll build up for an episode of Raw or something like that. Cause, like, I see them both being the Rumble match itself.
Right, and they'll probably have some sort of confrontation in the Rumble. They'll both be labeled as favorites since they're both big and strong. So there's no surprise in that. And, that's completely fine. Cause yeah, you've really got to have they're close enough, at least, name wise right now, in my opinion, to be a match at the Rumble, but they really do limit that to, it's usually three, maximum of four matches. before the Rumble itself, just because that takes so much time, no matter how much they manipulate the clock.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The Rumble itself needs an hour. I don't think I foresee this being a Rumble match. As I said, I think I'll find it being a Raw match, and it'll probably be fine as a Raw match. I don't see Ryback being the guy to beat Rusev. I think he'll be yet another victim. But we'll see. I definitely don't mind two big guys who can move and work to a certain extent, you know, battling it out.
Yeah, it should be a pretty solid match. I don't have that much of a problem. I mean, Ryback is kind of limited more from his just because of his bulk.
Right.
Rusev does seem to move a little bit better, and I mean, I have liked him when he's had a chance, at least in the ring, to be against better competition.
Yeah, I do. I like what I see from Rusev. Ryback is good in short doses, so I think you know, this will be good for both of them for the time being.
Okay, so I think that covers that. Oh, well, that covers that part of the segment, I should say.
Yes, this was one of those longer segments.
It was a little bit longer. Seth Rollins starts to, you know, say how great he is and how he needs a night off. And then my fellow Kent State alumni shows up, Dolph Ziggler, to challenge Seth Rollins to a match. Now, I love-hated this segment because I hated the beginning of it because Dolph Ziggler gave credit to Sting.
He's supposed to say the vigilante Sting, that he's going to get a strongly worded memo to that about that tomorrow.
You don't need this kind of build-up for Sting. Like, his name recognition is good enough. Ziggler is your guy that's you seem to want to keep around for a while in some type of... And I mean, we're talking about those upper echelon guys. He's kind of been bumping there for a while and not quite making it through, and it seems like they're pushing him up there again for a third time.
Right.
But they're just doing this shit to hold him back. Now, that being said, I liked that in his promo, he was finally cocky again.
Definitely, yeah. He was definitely very cocky. He talked about... He did say that he was going to steal the show, but he also added that he was going to beat someone, too. That element has always been weak in Ziggler. The I'm just here to entertain you versus I'm here to win a match. You know, that actually matters to him. That winning a fight actually matters to him. So, it was definitely good. I liked the cockiness. I liked you know, the matter-of-factness of it, of everything he said. I don't really have a problem with him giving credit to Sting, because as a babyface, if he would have said that he did it all by himself, that would be a lie.
Well, he didn't, but honestly, it's just killing me that they haven't acknowledged that he had two visual pins on Rollins before Sting ever showed up.
True, that's very true. I can't argue with that. Yeah, he definitely did.
You know, I understand giving Sting credit because in the end, after all the beating that Ziggler took, he did need Sting's help to win the match. Officially.
Right. But yeah, but Ziggler definitely tonight took his share of the credit. He cut that promo you've been waiting for him to cut for about a month now.
Yeah. And that's just another thing. Like, I'm not sure why it took that long to let him go back to that. And one thing that when you were talking there, I guess to me, if someone tells me that they're going to steal the show, to me that implies that they're going to win. I to me those go hand in hand. You are thinking of them as two separate things. Like, I guess it helps to stress that you're going to win the match, but to me it's just implied when you say that you're going to steal the show. Like, who steals the show losing? Like, who wants to be known for that? You know, like, when I hear that someone's going to steal the show, or that, you know, if X player says that he's going to, you know, blow up in the next game, I expect him to do well, not to stink.
The connotations, when you talk about that within the context of the show, it's like you're saying that you're in. Oh god, I'm turning into Wade Keller right now. Oh man, no. The connotation of it is more about, you know, I'm going out to have a great match, a great performance, than I am going out to win a fight.
Okay, yeah, I disagree with that stance, and I feel that we will be at an impasse.
Okie dokie.
So. You know, we have both presented our cases. I'm just not buying it. So, yeah, I guess it helps to throw that win part in then. It does help clarify for those that, I don't know, haven't played sports before, I guess, or something. I don't understand. But to me, that's implied with stealing a show, so... yeah, I don't know. Is there anything more to say about this segment?
Nope, let's move on.
Okie doke, excellent. Yeah, we can save Bunny Talk for the next segment, Chris. This segment, we need to talk about the Divas Championship, or as it's called, there's always another storyline being told, so let's not pay attention to the belt that we put around a woman's waist. And let's make it far more important to talk about The Miz and Jimmy Uso than Naomi or Nikki Bella, the actual champion of the Divas division.
Well, you said everything there is to say. All right, let's move on. So what? It's the Divas Championship while it's being held by Nikki Bella. It's the five minute match championship. If it was the NXT Women's Championship, it would matter. But this is it doesn't matter. The tag team title storyline is more important on the depth chart. So
that's one part that I did not sum up. The one thing that I don't understand about this segment is. Naomi somehow isn't distracted when an odd person, that being The Miz, comes down and starts cheering for her. But then somehow, when she is somewhat injured and her husband attacks the weird guy cheering her on, she gets distracted.
Correct, yeah.
Wouldn't The Miz distract you, also?
But I'm having The Miz around now. After he got her that Divas Championship match. Somehow, I'm not sure exactly how, where Miz gets the, where Miz gets the authority to grant people championship matches now. I mean, the whole thing has been, he's got Hollywood connections, I don't know what his WWE connections are. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, the last time they were talking about any type of connections with The Miz, he was being shut down by Triple H, quite soundly, I might add, when he had Damian Mizdow. So, I don't know why we would think, and I mean, that was just a couple of, you know, a month and a half ago. I know they expect us to forget everything that ever happens on their programming from week to week, but gee, meaning Christmas. At least give me a little more credit than a month and a half's worth of memory.
Right, yeah, I don't yet. I mean, overall, I like the Jimmy Uso, Miz, Naomi storyline, but yeah, tonight that kind of got a little silly there, you know, from how Miz got her the title shot to why exactly she was distracted by what was going on in the first place.
Well,
the way it was done is, no matter what happened when she went through that, walked through those ropes, Nikki Bella was going to cradle her and get the pin. It really didn't matter if she was distracted or not.
Right. And it just, I don't know. What was I just looking for? Jesus Christ. It has something to do with the distractions. Oh, my Lord. Oh, and I really need to plug my computer in right now. So, let's see here. Let's see if I can actually reset. Yeah, I don't know why Naomi doesn't give The Miz any grief whatsoever.
She did have a main event.
Okay.
But then he got her that title shot. Somehow.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously Jimmy wasn't down there until after The Miz came down. Like, it's just like, why aren't you adding 1 + 1? Or you ask Naomi, what is 1 + 1, and she says 5. You know, that's the level of stupidity I think that she's exhibiting at that moment of being pissed at Jimmy Uso.
Right.
So, yeah, not an enjoyable segment. I probably just should have left it to that much shorter description earlier.
Yeah. Okay.
Okie doke. Well, now we're on to Bunny Rabbits still making appearances on WWE TV, kids. Oh, so you want to make this quick? Why do you want to make this quick? It's Adam Rose, it's Kane, it's the Bunny.
Oh, yeah, the Bunny.
Now,
everyone who claimed the Bunny's demise last night are surely wrong. The Bunny lives.
Yeah.
He's like a tombstone night after night.
The Bunny lives so that he can become the next Pete Rose.
yes, indeed. The Bunny is now Pete Rose. Although it'll be hilarious. Oh, no. Oh, that's an unmasking. That would absolutely be worth all of this.
That would be the
right,
only.
The sounds of WrestleMania.
That would be the only unmasking that would make this all worthwhile.
Drag it out to WrestleMania and Pete Rose. The Bunny unmasks to be Pete Rose. 15 years later, he's finally gotten his revenge.
Oh, I am 100% behind that plan. Pete Rose, Bunny Suit, WrestleMania, Santa Clara, or wherever the hell it's being held this year.
Oh, Levi's Stadium.
Levi's Stadium.
I'll be there to see it live.
So, yeah, there really is not much to say about this.
Right.
The biggest topic that we had actually while we were both watching this segment was Jimmy Jacobs being in the crew. I did not notice until you brought it up.
He was there last night as well.
Well,
I kind of mixed feelings about it. Once again, I understand these guys all need to make a living here, and it was a paying gig for obviously to do nothing. But when you're a featured guy on someone else's TV, even if it's ROH TV, that doesn't have anywhere near the penetration that WWE to appear as a bit player on someone else's TV. I'm not sure if I'm exactly with that. I mean, you watch ROH every week. I don't. I don't even watch the show. So.
Yeah. Whatever. He's been in this group called the Decade, and they really. They haven't done anything. I don't care. BJ Whitmer is finally just being a dick by himself, and he's good at being a dick, so. Because from all accounts, it seems like he isn't the most pleasant person on the planet. I don't know. I don't really care, because those guys come in and out of that promotion so often that. They lose any type of continuity that they have because of how many trips those guys make to Japan.
Right.
Jacobs might have just come back from a Japan trip, and they tape so far in advance that...
Well, Jacobs doesn't do Japan. Jacobs isn't a Japan guy at all.
Oh, okay. Well, then, I don't know. He still disappears just because... They only have an hour a week as part of the problem. And the other part is that they do have a way worse taping schedule than TNA has ever had. Like, I guess that's one of the few compliments I have passed their way. Even if they taped 92 straight hours in both New York and Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, or where the hell they did it. At least they had it mapped out for a certain amount of time. ROH just tapes shit willy-nilly and then airs pay-per-views on TV because they can't get their own schedule straight. It's embarrassing. So, whatever. Fuck ROH. If Jimmy Jacobs wants to get some extra side cash, just do it, dude. Do it.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the other part of it. Yeah.
So we're lumping a couple of things together here. Seth Rollins had a promo with Renee Young in the back. I'm not sure there was much of any significance other than my continued dread that they are indeedy going to go back to the authority in some type of, a leading capacity, which is just completely unappealing to me in every way, shape, and form. But they still, the problem to me is that they are not providing true evidence of things going too crazy. Triple H predicted the place would come unhinged in 2 to 3 weeks. I haven't noticed any discernible difference between then and now. And I'm not sure how you're supposed to. Seth Rollins was claiming the Rusev attack is something gone rogue, but...
He's a heel. He's lying. Things are going 100% his way, so he's just being a heel.
I want some logic.
I gave it to you. In his mind, everything was better when the authority was... in charge. There's not much more to it than that.
Oh, his point of view part is fine. He can feel that way. But the problem is that they haven't done anything on TV to support that opinion. You know what I mean? Maybe what I'm saying is that my dread maybe is unwarranted because they really haven't done anything on TV to warrant that. But just the fact that they're continually bringing it up makes me think that it's going to be something, because they wouldn't bring up something like this often if it weren't a storyline in the making.
It's possible. It's very possible something will happen to bring back the Authority at some point, maybe in the not-too-distant future. I guess I'm more, I just don't, guys, it's not that big a deal to me what happened, one iota, if they do it or not, really. I'm indifferent, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna continue to be completely annoyed by any type of Authority figure that isn't somewhat neutral in just promoting the sport. You know, it'll drive me bananas until
the end
of time.
And on that, I do agree with you.
So, you know, that, you know, I do understand the heel part of it. Like, Rollins himself, it makes sense. But as an overall presentation, I am not enjoying it. Because I do like Rollins as a speaker.
He's getting better every week, yeah.
He's not one of those, let's throw him out there for 15 minutes, but...
Well, they have tried.
They have tried, and that... He's really more of a five-minute guy. If you can keep him in about that time frame, nothing's gonna go wrong. Let's not try to overextend things.
And that has been the problem with these shows. Because he's now the guy, he's now the voice of the Authority, essentially. So he's the top heel, so he is getting all this opening show promo time. And he's not that guy. That has been a problem since Survivor Series.
Well, and it definitely leads to, because I believe this was the topic at the beginning of the show, their lack of heels.
Right.
I'm good with him being the future. He still has the briefcase.
Absolutely.
I'm awesome with that, but they really do need him to have a little bit of help. Because, yeah, he should not be the top guy out there. I think, was it you that suggested...
The real answer is to just blow up the Raw formula and not do 15-20 minute or longer promo segments. Unless it's a really, really special occasion and we're really forwarding something.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we kind of talked about it early there. Like, even Chris Jericho is getting to the point where his segments are dragging. Like, he can carry a segment better than most people. And, I mean, I find myself entertained... Well, how do I want to put this? I like his interviews on his podcast. I guess I do not listen to his shenanigans at the beginning of the show.
I stopped doing that a long time ago. Jericho's not funny. But he thinks he's hilarious, and you never want to be trapped in a room with people like that.
But I do think, at least in a wrestling format, he can hold a segment for that length of time. But I mean, it's just not really necessary. Like, it would go into what I just think is the general problem, is that there's just a general lack of development.
Agree completely.
And just shortening segment like that would give more time to someone doing some type of promo. You know, again, like, they don't need long bits of time. Just give someone a minute or two. Like, it doesn't need to be a crazy amount of time, but they can't seem to get the writing together enough to flesh these things out.
Well, the writers, I think, love writing these long talking segments because it justifies their existence.
But why wouldn't writing multiple segments and helping develop multiple people not matter, too?
Let's move on to the match.
Well, I like both of these two in the ring.
Yeah, that is a very good match, a very good story. I gotta say, I didn't like the finish. I mean, I liked everything up to literally after the three count. Because, okay, Dolph Ziggler wins after the referee kicks out Mercury and Noble.
Right.
And, you know, then he catches Rollins distracted, another distraction finish, with the zigzag. Rollins is already back on his feet the second the ref's hand comes three. Ziggler might as well have hit him with a, you know, put him in a roll-up. And then the Stooges run back in, and Ziggler runs away from them instead of fighting them off like everyone else does. Like, for example, Roman Reigns would have done. That's part of the presentation of Ziggler. I don't like it at all. I've never liked it. It's the one thing he's missed. And some of it's his own fault, because he grew up on Kurt Hennig and Shawn Michaels, and he loves being that big bump, big sell guy. He needs to show some more toughness. I know he's your Kent State boy, but there are issues. That was a creative issue, definitely, the way that was laid out. But in general, toughness is a problem for Dolph Ziggler, which is weird because he's legitimately a tough guy, amateur wrestler, at least, you know, in his past life.
Right. And in this situation, I would definitely agree. There have been other times in the past that they've featured his athleticism to get out of a harrowing situation. And
I never liked it then. I never like when a guy doesn't. I guess he can back off a little bit, but the way they had him do it, it was like he was running from a fight.
But why do you want to get your ass kicked? Like, that seems just as stupid to me.
Why would they?
Like, shoot? I've never personally walked into a fight knowing or thinking that I'm going to get my ass kicked. I think I have a chance, and if I don't, I have backup.
Right.
So,
but I guess
if I got to the point where I had an escape route because I had more people against me, because that's part of the problem with wrestling in general, is that you can fight off multiple people. If you've ever been in a fight, if it's three against one, you're getting your ass kicked. No matter if it's two guys that are supposed to be stooges who are in very good shape for their age, and a guy who's supposed to be your equal, really, in the ring. You just lose.
So
why is that not tough? Like, that's just stupid fighting technique. Like, I would not have ever done that.
But it's wrestling, and it's been part of the makeup, the make-believe, you know, makeup of it.
Well, then it's bullshit, and it needs to change. You know, it doesn't need to stay that way.
Running away scared all the time.
Well, in some situations, it is really called for. I mean, that kind of stuff gets you in trouble. Ask Hitler.
Okay, we've officially been in this way too long. Wow.
What? The guy went into Russia because he got too cocky. Like, a good guy's supposed to be an idiot? He's supposed to use his brain. You don't put yourself into bad situations.
I know, man.
I don't get that mentality at all. I mean, that's just not a smart fighting maneuver at all. So you stay in there to get your ass kicked because you're the good guy?
No, he fights them off.
Well, he should. Now, in this situation, he should fight off the Stooges.
Right.
First problem is one that you pointed out, is that Seth Rollins acts like he didn't get hit with anything.
Right, right.
Which is bad booking on their end.
Absolutely.
Try to tell me that that's good booking then. Okay, so we got that established. It's bad. So he should have been down, and then Ziggler fights off the Stooges. That's what's supposed to happen at the end. Well, I guess you did say that the ending was really bad.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I just didn't like the part. I don't feel that in those situations like that, a babyface should ever run away. I mean, if Kane and Big Show went in that ring, okay, I understand, but not Mercury and Noble.
Right, I agree. And I think that's... And they didn't really capitalize on it, but they kind of showed, at least earlier on with Ziggler, they showed his athleticism off, getting out of situations that were more akin to that.
Right. I wouldn't believe that Dolph Ziggler would stand up to two giants. No.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I'm
then...
I'm trying to remember the other situations he was in. Wasn't he running from... I don't exactly remember the situations that had him kind of dodging out of tough situations. I don't remember those being situations where I thought, yeah, he's being smart. I think it was more like... It just didn't seem like situations where he would have been in that much danger had he stayed.
Gotcha.
But I can't even remember. But when I can't even remember exactly what any of those are.
Right, I can't even. I can't remember one in particular. Myself, but I do feel like they at least tried to turn him into a show off. By having him creatively get out of situations. But yeah, Mercury and Noble are a different animal than those situations. Because I think at least those were wrestlers in a segment.
Right.
At least people that are being portrayed as at least capable at their craft. These two are not being portrayed as capable by any standard.
Yeah, they're stooges. They're there to be knocked around. And yeah, it does establish that Ziggler is not one of those people. He's not John Cena. He's not Roman Reigns. He doesn't get to throw around the Stooges at will. Almost like Dean Ambrose. Got to knock them around 2-on-1.
Oh.
So once again, so it's not even like the big, strong, muscular guys, just the fearless, crazy guy got to beat the crap out of them 2-on-1. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so once again, establishing toughness has been, and he's responsible for enough himself, but also creative's as much, if not more to do with it. Toughness is an issue for Dolph Ziggler going forward, and continuing up that level. You still need that. All the flashy moves in the world. People like us can call him a great bump taker and a great seller, but 90% of the audience is not thinking along those terms. They see him as a guy who's always getting his ass kicked and then ekes out a win. As actually Steve Austin made the point on his podcast today.
Well, yeah, but then, you know, I'm not thinking that he's the one responsible ultimately for the overall presentation of the match.
Right. No, he's not. Not to parrot everything like say Austin said, but he needs to show the toughness more. He needs to, and match planning sessions. He needs to say, you know what, I need to get more in here.
I just have no faith.
Offensively.
I have no faith that they listen to anyone. I mean, that just seems to be maybe one of my underlying problems, too. Is that even when problems seem plain as day, they don't seem to address them. And it's just like, okay, if we're sitting here discussing this and it's been a problem for multiple years, why aren't you going, okay, you know what, Dolph, we're not going to go your route. Like, if he's more to blame for it, then they need to say, no, dummy, you're booking yourself poorly. We need you to look stronger than this.
Right. Agreed.
You know, you can't really have it both ways. You can't say creative's great and creative's great. It kind of goes in both directions. If it's a known fault for anyone, you know, not just Ziggler, you're writing the character. Like, you know, flaws might be in there from what their thought process is. And you know, that's part of your job.
I agree completely. We're not backstage. We don't know the conversations that go on there. But I do know, you know, what I see is that Ziggler's got a pretty good thing going. It's about as good as he's had it in his career right now. But you know, little things like tonight do add up. You know, the average guy sitting at home with a beer in his hand. You know, sees a pretty boy getting beat up, and then he hits one quick move, and then his opponent's already back on his feet, and then he runs away from two old guys. Aren't that old, but for the purposes of this conversation, what
yeah, they're probably about as old as most of the roster.
Yeah, they both had to retire early due to injuries, so they're not that old at all.
I just think it's a bad look. I don't like the look for Rollins, no matter how quickly he kicked out afterwards. Ziggler didn't really get that much help out of it.
No, I mean, they had a very good match, as they're always going to have when they get 10-15 minutes to go. It'll always be a good match, but no, I did not feel like, you know, and I know they're trying to frame it that way, you know, post-match in the commentary, but I didn't see this as any kind of a that big of a win for Dolph with the way it was presented.
Yeah, so... You know, I just don't feel any better about things after the end of tonight than I did at the end of last night, or right. Really about the end of Sunday night either. I just have a general problem with the whatever direction things go. you know, even if I honestly just don't get it. Like, I don't really in the general scope of things do not get where they're going. you know, the WWE in general. But I do, as you keep noting, enjoy a lot of in-ring product.
Right, yeah. I would say tonight was, unto itself, it was a good show. Only 2 hours long, not that much, you know, filler. I generally enjoyed tonight's show. It was a good episode of SmackDown.
Yeah, we didn't go completely nuts, and we're only a little bit over the hour mark. So I think I went a little off the rails there, because it seemed like we mostly agreed, really, for the most part.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't, it was a pretty decent enough thing. Like I said, I really, like, that's the one thing that we kind of addressed in the write-up, too, was whether this is the worst wrestling's got. And I said, you know, the main thing that is keeping me in is that despite all the bad booking, there is still a lot of good wrestling going on.
Yeah, there's very good wrestling being bookended by not great storytelling and you know, management in general. Once again, we're heading up on that time where hopefully things turn around. I feel the next 2 weeks will kind of be throwaway shows. And then that first Raw of the year is always something. It's typically a good show. They typically put their best foot forward for that one.
Yeah. Well, let's certainly hope for that. Everyone waits for WrestleMania season, and it is just a couple of weeks away. So we will see. And yeah, we're at Stunt Granny, at DeFrango 11, at Chris Calamedia, which is MIDIA. And, yeah, we are glad to bring you a different type of show.
Yeah, this was an interesting experiment. and we've only recorded an hour, although the entire process of doing it took us about 2.5 hours. So I'm not sure if we'll do this again, but... Hey, it was interesting to try, folks.
The funny thing is we're actually ending time-wise before we normally do.
Really? We've recorded less actual content than usual?
No. Since we started earlier than normal, ending. Despite the length of it, I do agree that it is actual time-wise has gone longer than normal. Still, we started early enough that we're done a little bit early.
All right, cool, man.
So, grandkids, have a good night.
Night, man. Night, everybody. Or day, or whatever it's going to be.